Moncrief on News Talk.
This is the most vibrant, diverse and fast-changing place in Ireland. Now, the people of the North Inner City are electing their Dublin City Councillors for the next 5 years. This is the story of a local election in one ward, of seven hopefuls fighting to top the poll in the North Inner City.
There's 19 candidates and only seven seats.
The last thing Irish politics needs at the moment is more hard men.
The community is on a knife edge. We're crying with the social issues that's blighted it for years.
We are living in truly revolutionary times.
I don't need to come first. I need to come seventh.
If you don't know how to use your shoulders or elbows in politics, you really shouldn't be in politics at all.
It's hard work. It's a part-time job. It's not well paid. Yeah. And they think you're there 24-7.
You're the walk in the Dublin County Council.
Yeah.
It drives you crazy, man. It's as boring as shite.
That is a clip from The Locals, which is on tonight at 9.35 on RTE1. And with me now to discuss this show and the other shows is James Dempsey, our TV nerd. Is that offensive?
No, I'll take
TV
it.
TV expert. Let's call you an expert, not a nerd. So I'm a big political anorak, love politics. Mm-hmm. So I'm really into this one, which I'm not usually when you come in and talk about TV. I'm usually like, snorefest.
Wait till show three.
Okay.
I get my revenge of the nerds. Okay, anyway.
Right. So this is a documentary and it's following a number of candidates who are eking it out to claim a seat in...
in the North Inner City ward of the Dublin City Council local
now,
elections.
Those have happened, so there's spoilers. Yes. We know who's going to get elected.
That's true. Well, I mean, unless you live outside of the North Inner City, in which case you mightn't be too familiar with who gets elected, right? I live in South Inner City, so I didn't know who was elected in the North Inner City.
Okay.
And certainly this show has plenty of drama. Now, what I have to give credit to Luke McManus, the director of this, is the quick turnaround he got, because he started filming this, or it was greenlit on May the 13th. The election was on June the 7th, and then it is broadcast tonight. So that is a very quick turnaround to make a sprawling documentary following, I think, five candidates for seven places, and then several other candidates were put on the cutting room floor because they had followed them, but there just wasn't the runtime in this 50-minute documentary to.
So they followed them and found them too boring.
Well, or they weren't elected, but potentially they. I think. Really,
so do we mainly follow the people who do get elected?
No, I think that would qualify as a spoiler to the viewers out there. So I will say, some of them get elected and some of them do not.
Okay.
But what we get here is local politics.
Yep.
Right. And that is the kind of bread and butter of this whole documentary. I found it very fresh and novel, despite the fact we just went through the local election, because I live in an apartment building and we don't get canvassed, right?
Okay,
so
right,
I got
okay.
to see. So I, this is like my secondhand canvassing experience.
Yep.
Because we get to see these various different independent candidates and party acolytes following through on their various manifestos and claims on the, you know, at the doorstep, and trying to win over voters, explaining proportional representation, all that kind of stuff, right?
And sorry, just the operations of it. Do you see them knocking on doors?
You see them knocking at doors.
Do you
yeah.
see the doors being opened?
You see the door. You see their interactions with members of the public.
Did they ask them first if they were okay to be recorded?
I'm unfamiliar. You will have to put that
to the creator
of the show.
Okay.
They don't dedicate screen time to it anyway. But I assume they got all the requisite signatures. And I will say that what we get here is, my favorite bit about it is the kind of pettiness of politics.
Give us an example.
Right. So like there's a part in it where one of the candidates running, Janet Horner, already a sitting councillor for the Green Party, is running to be re-elected. And she's getting increasingly frustrated that Ray McAdam of Fine Gael, also a sitting councillor, there's visual representation of it, that his posters are covering her name on her posters, and
okay.
how she sends him these texts and talks about how she's got two blue ticks but he's not responding. And later on you kind of get a good flavour of why, like, our political system is a bit funny, because we put these parties together to coalesce even though they have, you know, different ideological beliefs,
yeah.
and that they technically get along but they don't like each other. So, you know, you've got a bit of a like unhappy marriage or odd bedfellows there at the count. But my biggest criticism of this as a piece is It's handsomely made. It's beautifully shot. It's a little scant. And that's simply because it's only one episode, right? So we have okay. we are telling the story of multiple candidates at a time where they go to great lengths to discuss how fraught our political landscape is, right? And we have this new arrival of independents often taking quite drastic stances that, you know, that politically haven't been voiced in this country as
loudly.
And
are those characters represented in this? Like,
very,
are there...
Very, very much so, right?
Far right, okay.
And what I want to say is that in that, we don't get enough space for them to breathe, right? And or to kind of express themselves completely, rightly or wrongly, right? Well, mm-hmm. rightly or leftly, right?
Yeah.
And in doing so, it's all just kind of rushed and pushed together. If this had been two episodes, it would have made the count, you know, the count and the election, well, the electing of various candidates far more dramatic, because we would have had more personal investment in their mm-hmm. rise or fall, right? So, like, all in, if my biggest complaint is I wanted more,
that's a good complaint.
It's a good
to
sign,
have.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's something that they'll do in further elections with, you know, not Dublin.
Yeah, well, I actually thought the best thing to do would be in 5 years' time, go back and see these councillors again and see what you did in your 5 years.
Yeah, but they probably don't want that because...
that's because responsible.
That would be the responsible or holding them to account thing that they did. Talk to me, just before we finish up with that, is there a lot of the kind of like microaggressions and like off the cuff remarks that are a little bit bitchy? And
there are plenty of them peppered throughout. There's a great line when one of the candidates is approaching the count on the final day and various people are saying to that candidate, oh, well, you did your best before they've even entered. So they're getting a sense of how well it's going before they even arrive. And
right.
and their comment as to that is it makes for very, very good TV.
OK, brilliant. Well, I will check that out. That is at 9:35 tonight on RT1, and then will probably be available on the RT player forever. Let's take the next clip.
I mean, the fallout, my recollection is it was immediate and big.
You and I didn't do a movie because of it.
This is what I thought.
This
I thought we were
Young Man with Unlimited Capital, which
yes.
was one of the best scripts
yeah.
I had read in a long time.
You were going to do it, and they wanted me to do it too, and then they told me that you didn't want me to do it. And I just assumed at the time, it hurt my feelings up, but I assumed it was simply the Brat Pack.
I didn't want to have anything to do with any of us. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I just,
yeah.
I didn't want to do any, I wouldn't, if it were Judd, I would have said the same thing. To be seen again in another film would ultimately, and could potentially have a negative impact. Working together just almost felt like we were kryptonite to each other.
My understanding, you were not interested in talking about the Brat Pack for years and years.
I'm asked to do retrospectives all the time, whether it's Repo Man or The Outsiders or Young Guns or Breakfast Club. I turn everything down.
How come you're talking to me?
Because you called me. Because you asked.
So that was a clip from Bratz, which is available to stream and binge now on Disney Plus. So it's about an actor and former Brat Pack star, Andrew McCarthy. Was Brat Packs a real thing?
Well, he certainly thinks so. And yes, it was, right?
All right, okay.
So the Brat Pack is the name given by this journalist for New York Magazine named David Bloom. He wrote this feature about Emilio Estevez in 1985 when Estevez was having this hot right now moment, mm-hmm. right? And he wrote this article cover story going, the new Hollywood Brat Pack, and listed among them the likes of Ali Sheedy, Demi Moore, Andrew McCarthy, Rob Lowe, etc.
So just like a motley crew of actors who are hot right now.
Yes, but the thing that sort of united them was that they were young, right? That
okay.
they were like very early 20s and they had had this run of hits in the early 80s, and then he coined them the Brat Pack and they became known that forevermore, right?
But like lumped together in that, but they didn't know each other outside of that.
Well, they worked together professionally as well. So they not only were they in, you know, they were in, I should say, the Brat Pack movies sort of starred multiple Brat Pack members at the same time.
Okay.
So the movies are things like Pretty in Pink or The Breakfast Club
okay.
or St. Elmo's Fire, right? You've never heard of it.
No, I haven't heard right? of it. Yeah. I've heard of The Breakfast Club.
Yeah, fair enough, right? And basically, all these years, 40 years later, Andrew McCarthy, who starred in Pretty in Pink and St. Elmo's Fire and Mannequin. You ever seen Mannequin?
No.
Anyway, right. Anyway. Weekend at Bernie's?
No, like I'm not going to have seen any of these. I've heard of Weekend at Bernie's.
Okay,
it's about a dead man.
Anyway, yeah, he's propping up Bernie, right?
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, so he, 40 years later, has decided that this ruined his career. That being labelled a brat in the 1980s, you know, put the kibosh on his career because he had these aspirations to be this big, you know, the next big Pacino, De Niro, whatever. Okay. And it didn't happen. And he fully lays the blame on this article torpedoing not only his career, but pretty much every other member of the Brat Pack. And it is fair to say that a lot of their careers fizzled out. I mean, they have worked consistently. If you check their IMDb, right, they, you know, they have odd jobs every year. Mm-hmm. But they're era of being top
Leonardo
billing,
DiCaprio is just gone.
Is gone, right? So that in and of itself is an interesting premise for a documentary, exploring, you know, the zenith of their careers in the 1980s, and particularly 1985, and then their fall from grace. And if that's what we got, it would be interesting. But instead, we get Andrew McCarthy, who going around talking to all of the other Brat Packers going, yeah, can you believe they said that in that article about us? Right. And then finding the, you know, the journalist and going, do you know you said that about us in the article? It's like, do you regret it? And he's like, no, I don't. Right. So all in, it's a kind of very strange documentary because it's so circuitous. Like, it's literally just the same conversation points over and over and over and over again. Where it's at, it's actually most interesting is where Leah Thompson, who plays Marty McFly's mother in Back to the Futures, right? She's
a brat too.
She would describe herself as brat adjacent, right?
Okay.
And she's talking about how the Brat Pack, so to speak, could never ever happen again because of monoculture, right? That in the 1980s, culture was so defined by rarity, I guess, whereas now everyone is able to watch and consume whatever they want, whenever they want, and therefore nobody is watching the same, not everyone is watching the same thing at the same time. So,
but would it also not be a case that casting has changed? Like, if you are casting something and Demi Moore is in it with Justin Timberlake and you're not going to cast that whole crew again in something else because it's just derivative.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, like, the two big movies that they talk about, which are The Breakfast Club, start all of these as like high school seniors. And then the next one was St. Elmo's Fire, which came out the same year, in which they were all college graduates.
Right? Okay.
So within the space of 2 months, they had, you know, aged 5 years. The whole thing is rather, rather silly. But it's almost comically silly when you think how aggrieved this actor Andrew McCarthy is.
So he is blaming this article on his career not reaching the heights he dreamt that it would.
I think so. And he interviews the other Brat Packers and some of them would agree. Some of them kind of challenge that. He interviews other experts. I mean, he pays a visit to Malcolm Gladwell for some reason.
Who's psychologist. Sort
of, yeah, who goes, yeah, I think it's just because it rhymes, you know, the Brat Pack with the Frat Pack, the famous 1960s one, right? So all in, it's a bit of a mess of a documentary because I think there is like the bones of something really interesting and nostalgic there that just isn't kind of well fleshed out.
Does anybody confront him on the fact that perhaps he didn't reach his career heights because he was a mediocre actor and that he was good enough then to cast as a child or a teenager, but like once you need A-list love interest in a movie, that's never going to be him, and it's actually not that he's part of a Brat Pack.
Well, if they did, it made the cutting room floor. Well, okay. Right? But all in, I guess, like, what's perhaps the most revelatory thing about it is, you know, it's all about this article. And then I sat down this afternoon to read the article to see how bad it possibly was, you know, how much of a hit piece was it?
Yeah.
And like Andrew McCarthy, around whom this entire thing is framed, gets one scant mention in the entire thing.
Oh, wow.
And it's, and you know, I'm sort of thinking like, just get over it, Andrew, you know, like, let it go.
Maybe he'll get cast. Maybe people will be reminded of him now.
Perhaps.
And then he'll get cast in something. Okay, so that is The Brat Pack, stream now on Disney Plus. It's just one episode, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, great. Let's listen to the next clip.
We programmed Sally special for you, Susisa, based on what we know from Massa about you. That you hate bananas.
No bananas will enter these halls.
That it's been difficult for you to make friends here in Japan.
It's because I'm dyslexic. Did he tell you that? That languages are hard for me.
I'm sorry for your disability. You're very brave. Still, our research shows that robots can be of great comfort for people.
I hate robots.
May I ask why?
Because they're creepy.
Oh.
But robots are expressions of the creators. Sunny was created by your husband. You do not find Masa creepy.
Not till now.
That is not true, Susisa. The Masa I know is a good man. And I believe he would take comfort in knowing you have Sunny. Please, Massa would take great comfort.
Okay, fine. I'll keep it. Just tell me how to turn it off.
How bizarre. That is Sunny. And there are new episodes of that every Wednesday on Apple TV Plus. If you're just joining us, James Dempsey is here for TV on the radio. James, what is this?
This is, you know, you got to find Irish interest somewhere, right? This is based on a novel by an Irish writer named Colin O'Sullivan who lives in Japan. He wrote it. It's called The Dark Manual. It's about an Irish woman living in Japan. And it was bought by Apple TV, who have since turned it into a vehicle for Rashida Jones, who people will know from The Office, American Office. And Parks and Rec, and many other films as well. And she must have some sweetheart deal with Apple TV because she's appeared in a number of different things for them as well, including Silo. She's great in that. And in it, she plays Susie, the eponymous Susie, who is living in Japan.
Sunny.
No, Susie.
Oh, sorry.
She's living in Japan with when her husband, Masa, who is played by the Japanese actor Hidetoshi Nishijima, who people will know from Drive My Car, which was a big Oscar bait movie a couple of years ago. He and her son, Zen, perish in a plane crash. And when we meet this at the beginning of the first episode, we're treated to, a Wes Anderson-esque sci-fi comedy about grief, right? So it is a comedy drama with then a very strong thriller horror tinge thrown in as well, with a sci-fi bent and subtitles.
What is the horror bit of it?
Okay, so after her son and husband are assumed dead because their bodies haven't been found in this plane crash, her husband, who worked in for some technology company, his bosses arrive at her door with Sunny the robot, right? And Sunny is this,
as a gift of sorrow.
Yes, like, exactly. Okay. And Sunny is this kind of cross between the Big Hero 6 robot with Marvin, the paranoid android from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And she is all sunny and light, right? She comes into Susie's life and is trying to cheer her up and make everything better. And she's been specifically programmed by her late husband. And then we reveal that there's a lot more going on that we don't know about behind Sunny's hardwire, shall we say, right? And her various coding, etc. So all in...
Like what kinds of things?
Well, that would be a huge spoiler, so I cannot say that on the
air. Is it genre-changing spoiler? Like,
very
is she trying
so.
To kill... Okay.
Well, no, I wouldn't go that far, right?
Okay. But she's a creep.
But there are, I mean, the whole thing, there's murder afoot, there's hacking, there's the dark net, there's an entire subplot involving drunken robots. It's all a mishmash of things. Now, what it is also, on top of all of those things, it is glorious to look at, right? The absolute star of this is the production department, because the sets are gorgeous. The costumes are stunning. The like kind of retro-futuristic technology, it's set in a speculative Japan roughly 10 years in the future, is all really cool and like you kind of wish you were living in that world yourself, right?
Okay.
It does these very lofty questions about like AI and the intersection of grief and trusting your spouse and what about, you know, can you ever really know someone else? All these very, very heavy questions with then very funny one-liners and rather astute observations about like cultural differences. All in, I don't know if I liked it. Right?
How many episodes are there?
So far there are two. As I always say, I like it when they're only half an hour long, so it ticks those boxes. But so far, I'm a bit worried that I've been enjoying the kind of visuals more so than the story.
Okay.
But I can't say I don't hate the story either. It wormed its way under my skin nonetheless, and I'm intrigued.
Okay, well, yeah. That's enough to be curious about. Okay, so for people listening, those three shows again are The Locals, which airs tonight at 9:35 on RTE1 and will be available on Player. Bratz, available on Disney Plus now. And Sunny, which is streaming on Apple TV Plus every Wednesday and has two episodes out so far. James Dempsey, thank you very much.
Thanks, Stephanie.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.